Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and let's get right to it, because how about the Dallas Cowboys, as once again, they totally redeemed themselves and post a historic 34-31 comeback win against the Rams and improve to 2-1, and will now host the New Orleans Saints, who are 1-2 on Sunday night. Time now to welcome into the Quicken Loans Studios, Nick Eatman. He is the beat writer for DallasCowboys.com. Also, the author has a new book that is out. It is titled, If These Walls Could Talk, Dallas Cowboys, stories from the Dallas Cowboys sideline, locker room, and press box. Good evening, Nick. It's nice to have you back with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, so the Cowboys, they get the big bounce after being down 21-0. They erased that massive deficit, and they certainly showed a lot of grit and heart. But, Nick, I'm sure you'll agree, it is amazing what can happen when you hang on to the ball.
Exactly. And you know, this team, that's part of the reason they were down 21-0, is that they fumbled the ball away a little bit. But I thought the most impressive part of the whole comeback was the fact that they were able to stick to their plan and run the ball. You know, this team is slowly but surely becoming more of a run-oriented team. And sometimes when you get down three touchdowns, you feel like you have to throw it around and get back in a hurry. But they stayed patient, and they just kind of chipped away, and were able to finally overtake the Rams at the end. But I thought sticking to the game plan was such a huge thing for the Cowboys.
Absolutely. A new offensive identity. But talk some more about how huge of a win this was. I mean, what does this prove about this particular team?
Well, I think it shows, kind of like I said before, it shows that they really are, their strength is in the running game. But I think, you know, this team, they put out T-shirts in training camp that just had one word on the front, fight. You know, they knew this was going to be a tough year. They were losing some really key players from last season, with Sean Levy and her, DeMarcus Ware. Every game is going to be a fight. And that's what a team that's been 8-8 for 3 years, that's what you have to do. And when you get down 21-0, just like any boxing match, you got hit in the nose and you're down in the first couple of rounds, and you got to find a way to stop the bleeding. And that's kind of what this team did. And not only made that game respectable, but came back and won. So I think that they showed the fight and that Jason Garrett is wanting out of this football team, and also showed that, you know, that they can grind out some wins and figure out how to overcome a team like the Rams.
The beat writer for DallasCowboys.com, Nick Eatman, is joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We absolutely love hearing from you. Join us at Twitter, at E Radio Sports. And I don't know what your projections were coming into this season, but what is your belief, Nick? I mean, does this team have the character, the heart, that is necessary in order to make a deep run?
Well, you know, I said going into the year, I mean, 3 years in a row at 8-8, I'm going to probably stick with that. I think that that's what this team has become. I think their defense struggles more than it did, at the first part of last year. But I think the offense is going to be a lot better. I still think, until I see differently, it's going to be about 8-8 season. That's why this game coming up Sunday against the Saints is going to be such a big one for the Cowboys, because, you know, last year they were 1-1, 2-2, 3-3, 4-4, 5-5, 6-6, and then all the way to 8-8. If they can get off that swing and not go to 2-2 here, go to 3-1, and you get a lot of home games coming in up here, they have a chance to really make their mark this season. But I think that's why this game against the Saints could be a turning point.
Okay, of course, the win against the Rams, that was, they mounted the largest comeback during regulation in team history. When it was time, you know, Tony Romo really shined through. He looked like he's making progression, and he's getting healthier, and his ability to make big plays.
Yeah, I mean, he does look more comfortable, and just the way that when the rush comes in, first two games he was just ducking down quickly, trying not to get hit. he was looking more like himself in this game, this last game against the Rams, where he was moving, keeping his eyes up, moving with his feet, and he wasn't sacked at all in the game. And in fact, the biggest play of the game, in my opinion, was a 16-yard run on 3rd and 13, where he was making guys miss in the open field. I mean, he really did look like his old self again. And I think if they have that, coupled with the running they have, DeMarco Murray, big play guys of Dez Bryant and Jason Witten, and I think if Romo can be like himself again, I think this team has a chance to be a lot better than it's been.
Hey, Nick, you highlight that play, but what about the zip on the ball, that perfect 68-yard touchdown pass to Dez Bryant? We can't forget that.
Can't, no. I mean, it was wide open. He said sometimes those can be the toughest throws because you just can't overthrow them, and all you have to do is get it out there, and he did. He did a nice job there. It was a good play. Of them coming back, the Rams had just intercepted one for a touchdown where the guy took a chance and bit on the pass. Well, sometimes, when you do that and you play aggressively, you can get burned. And so that's what happened on that one. It was wide open, and Tony did a great job of striking it in there to him.
What does the future hold in terms of with Tony? I mean, many of us were kind of holding our breath. I mean, can he be that consistent playmaker?
Well, I think he can. I mean, I think he's getting smarter and smarter as these veteran guys. Well, they may not have the same kind of physical tools that they had back in the day. I still think that that they see it. They've seen everything. That's why I think that was such a surprise that he played so poorly in that first game against the Niners, throwing some interceptions down there in the red zone. But I think for the most part, I think Tony still got good. I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years. Left in him to play off the contract that he got last year, and I think that he might play the game a little differently than he did, but I still think that if you can surround him with a good running game and maybe a solid defense on the other side, I still think he can be a good game manager, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with being a game manager and doing it when it's time for you to be needed to go out there and win the game. He can do that, but sometimes you can lean on other people to help you win.
Nick Eatman is with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. He's the beat writer for DallasCowboys.com. And I guess when we talk about Tony Romo, it's just important that we be patient because he is 34 and he has had back-to-back season surgeries. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, it is huge, and I mean, people know this. You don't have to be a football player to know that if you don't have your back, it's hard to do anything. It's hard to function in life, and so, I think that having some time off that like he had, the back is not too bad for him. It's just getting his body in football shape, and just throwing the ball that many times and being able to run around and see things, and I think that he did have some rust, both physically and mental rust. Early in the season, we'll see if he's completely back to himself again. But the St. Louis game was a good start, and I think that everybody knows in this game against New Orleans, Drew Brees is coming to town, and they're going to probably put up some points to stay toe to toe with them. That he's going to have to play his best game as well.
Okay, the Cowboys face the Saints on Sunday night. But one of the questions that we were discussing last week on the show was: are the Cowboys better when Romo does less?
I think so. I think all quarterbacks are, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that there's an elite group out there of four guys that really hasn't changed much, in my opinion, of the Manning and Brady and Brees and Aaron Rodgers. I think those guys are really good at going out there and winning games. I think most quarterbacks are better when they have a better supporting cast, and I think you could make the case for those four I just mentioned that when they're having guys run the ball. Last year was the first time in Tony Romo's career that he had a 1,000-yard rusher. And now he's got the leading rusher in the NFL in DeMarco Murray. And so I think when he has some help, I think all quarterbacks are a little bit better. So, yeah, if you can go out there and throw 30 times and complete 21 of them and 240 yards or whatever and have a 100-yard rusher, I think that's a much better situation for any quarterback, regardless of their age, regardless of their skill. And so, yeah, when Tony Romo's doing less, I think that is a good thing. Last year he threw like 600 passes. I mean, that's not a good recipe for a quarterback, especially coming off a back injury.
Well, the Cowboys certainly committed to the running game. It's a definitive sign that the mindset and approach has changed offensively for Dallas. I give some love to DeMarco Murray because he's been fantastic.
Yeah, he's been amazing. He's about 95% good. I mean, he has had a fumble in each game. So he's on pace for 16 fumbles lost. But I think if you're going to come back, it happens early. And I think if you're going to come back and rush for 100 yards and score some touchdowns like he has made up for it.
Getting ready for the Cowboys and the Saints on Sunday night. We're visiting with Nick Eatman, the beat writer for DallasCowboys.com. We are up against the clock. We will be right back and be talking some more Dallas Cowboys right here at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And you join us online at Twitter at E-Radio Sports. We will be right back. Hey, we are so glad you're joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We love connecting with you. Join us at Twitter at E-Radio Sports. We're getting you fired up and set and ready for the big matchup on Sunday night between the Saints and the Cowboys. I know we focused a lot, Nick, on a number of the key players for the Cowboys, but what are your thoughts on just the management of their head coach, Jason Garrett? I mean, you really tip your hat to them because how they were able to continue to believe in the system and to rally like that from being down 21.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with Garrett. He is a coach that if you look at him on the sideline, I mean, he stays pretty even keel at all times. He doesn't get too high or too low, and I think that's important when you're down 21. It's important when you're up 21. Don't know if I remember a lot of games lately the Cowboys have been in that situation, but
right.
Because that's what they've been. I mean, for people to say, well, Garrett, and he gets criticized a lot. Well, he's a bad coach. Well, he's certainly not a bad coach. You can't be a bad coach if you don't have a losing record.
I agree.
He doesn't really have much of a winning record. He's been right there. This team has been a very average football team, which, you can make a case for that. Like, is that a horrible thing? They're steady. They've been right on the cusp of making the playoffs. They have not gotten over the hump, and I think that Garrett has to take some of the blame for that. I mean, if part of your team is to get your team ready to play when it matters the most. And some of the times in December, this team has struggled when it has a chance to get into the playoffs. And so I think that that's been an issue. But I do think that, he's kind of putting his stamp on this team little by little. He said 3 or 4 years ago he wanted to be like the Niners when it comes to, getting a tough offensive line. Well, the last 3 of the last 4 years, they've drafted an offensive lineman in the first round.
Right.
Now the running game is one of their strengths. So, it hasn't been an overnight thing for him, but he is starting to get the type of football team that he wants, and I think you're starting to see it. Now, will the Cowboys, and they've remained patient. Jerry Jones has been patient with him. But we'll see if that continues. I still think this is a do-or-die year for him. I think that this team needs to get into the playoffs and win the division for him to stay around.
Okay, the beat writer for DallasCowboys.com, Nick Eatman, is with us tonight at YSR. He is also the author of his new book that's just been released, If These Walls Could Talk, Dallas Cowboys, Stories from the Dallas Cowboys Sideline, Locker Room, and Press Box. I promise we're going to talk about that here in just a moment. But a big storyline this past week was Morris Claiborne and walking out of practice after his demotion. Should there be some punishment for his behavior? He was a bad boy.
Well, there will be. I mean, he'll get fined by the team internally. I don't think they're going to suspend him for a game or anything like that. I mean, he was gone for a few hours during missing a meeting. He came back and later that night met with Jason Garrett, and I think it was not so much the motion itself, because it's happened before with him not starting over Orlando Scandrick. And B, the second and third corner doesn't play a whole lot, a different amount of snaps. I mean, I think in the St. Louis game, Scandrick played 4 snaps less than Claiborne. So that doesn't really matter because they're going to be out there on the field anyways. I think it was how it happened and however that message was relayed to him that bothered him to the point where, he was so frustrated and he left. I'm not saying that he's justified in that. He's a competitive guy. That's fine. But, as a pro, you got to learn how to handle that, those things better than walking out on your team. He came back. He apologized to the head coach. He apologized to the entire team the next morning. And I think, as from the Cowboys' standpoint, they're going to put it behind him. We'll see how he plays, though, in this game. He'll be tested a lot against the Saints.
Okay, Nick Eatman is with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to segue now and talk about his new book that's just been released, If These Walls Could Talk, Dallas Cowboys, Stories from the Dallas Cowboys Locker Room, Sideline, and Press Box. And there's all kinds of goodies inside this book. I really enjoyed going through it. Tell our listeners about it across the country.
Well, I was approached with the idea to do that, and my first thought is, a lot of people, it spans over 15 years, a 15-year period, where, the Cowboys haven't had a lot of success. It's one playoff win. But still, you don't have to have success on the field to have some good, interesting stories, behind the scenes. And And so I was happy to be able to do that. And, you know, it's a lighthearted thing. There's not a lot of juicy stuff in here. I know the title is pretty good, but, you know, I think for the most part, I mean, I tried to have some fun with it, with some of the stories, some of the ironic things over the years that I've always thought were interesting. And, you know, I had to really rack my brain over a few months span and say, you know, well, what are some of the things? Because when you have a team like the Cowboys, everybody covers this team. There's a lot of stories that have been told. So, you know, I tried to really think about some ones that haven't been told, and also some personal ones for me. You know, every chapter starts out with a kind of a personalized story, whether it be about Tony Romo or Bill Parcells or Emmitt Smith or whatever, and things that have happened to me in the past that just really get written. And I finally had a platform to do that.
You know, Nick, what are you talking about? There's no juicy stuff in here. I loved the flag football game with Tony Romo. Come on, break it down for the audience.
Well, you know, Tony Romo, he's a competitor. He likes to go do things. He likes to play. He plays soccer. He plays golf, of course, all the time. And after his second year with the team, he was just a third quarterback, a rookie. Nobody even knew who he was. Well, in February of that, the Cowboys had a flag football team where, you know, just company guys were out there playing. I think we had some old practice jerseys. We were throwing around, and we were a pretty good team for a while. And then about midway through the year, we see Romo coming out. And, of course, you know, not everyone on our team even knew. Is that Tony Romo? You know, and of course, people on the other teams, they didn't know who he was, the third quarterback. But you know, wear the helmet all the time. They didn't know who this guy from anybody. So he goes out there, and he's just unbelievable. He just throws the ball around. He's just, you know, four or five touchdowns. And not only that, on defense, he was great too. He was getting people in position. He was making interceptions. You could just tell, you know, this guy's a pro athlete, and we're not. And so he was amazing. So that was fun. And then the ironic part of the whole deal is the fact that we get to the playoffs and we're facing the team, and this team spoke nothing but Spanish, and they were speaking Spanish to each other on defense, and I don't know what happened, but we got killed, and Tony threw about four interceptions, and we kept, you know, and we kept trying to do different things, we kept getting interceptions, and they were just two steps ahead of the whole team. We couldn't block well, we couldn't, and it was awful. And so, you know, I don't even think we knew what foreshadowing was. But to get to now, here's Tony Romo, a great guy in the regular season, gets to the playoffs and throws interceptions in a flag football game. You know, at that time you're thinking, okay, well, you know, maybe this guy's not really that great. No one thought he'd be the face of the franchise in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. But that's kind of what happened. So interesting thing for sure. But that's Tony. You know, he's a competitor. If he has a chance to go out and play soccer or flag football or golf or whatever, he's
going
to do it.
Been going one-on-one with Nick Eatman, the beat writer for DallasCowboys.com. Thank you so much, Nick, and we'll talk to you again real soon, okay?
All right, thank you.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead. Stay close. Okay, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, and we have got a ton of ground to cover in our next segment in the college football and NFL arena. Always a pleasure to welcome back to YSR inside the Quicken Loans Studios. That is Husker great Jason Peter, who without a doubt, I can't see his handsome face right now, but I know he is all smiles after Amir Abdullah leads 22nd-ranked Nebraska past Miami last week. I mean, you were on the show last week. Jason, how did we not talk about this matchup? I couldn't believe that. When I was flipping through the channels, I'm like, oh my gosh, we didn't talk about it.
Yeah, I know. It's you're talking about two programs there that really have fell off the front page.
Yeah.
And, you know, Miami probably more shocking, I guess, than Nebraska. But you also have to understand, I guess Miami has gone through, you know, a few different probation sort of eras and constantly fighting an image problem down there. Al Golden, I don't know if he knew maybe what he was getting himself into. They've been through athletic directors down there. We actually have Miami's old athletic director, but if you ask a Miami fan about Sean Eichhorst, that pretty much say, who's that? Mm-hmm. We never heard a word from him. And Nebraska fans are kind of learning, I guess, how he operates. You don't get to hear him speak too often. It's just every once in a while he sends out a memo to everybody. But yeah, it was a great game. You know, if I don't want to, I guess, say use the word great as in you had two great football teams, but you know, if you have two average teams that kind of duke it out, it looks like a great game, and I think that's pretty much what you had. You had two average, maybe slightly above average football teams, but it was a good one. I mean, in Memorial Stadium, there was 92,000 people that were on their feet, you know, for the entire game, yelling and screaming, and there were a couple almost bench-clearing brawls that I'm sure had Bo Pelini and Al Golden kind of, you know, a little nervous, just praying that they could get to the end of this game without the benches clearing, which ultimately happened. But you mentioned Amir Abdullah. I mean, I said it before, he's special. He's a special football player.
He really is. Mm-hmm.
And you just kind of, you love to see a guy like that do well because he's as solid off the field as he is on. And it's almost like the limelight, all the attention. It doesn't make him uncomfortable, but he would much rather deflect that to the rest of the team. And, you know, those are the type of guys that you want on your roster.
That is definitely refreshing. So your Huskers, they're 4-0, and this marks the third time in seven seasons under Bo Pelini that they have completed non-league play and been 4-0. So are you a believer that this team can go deep?
I think they should be playing in the Big Ten championship game. I don't know if they'll win. You look at who they have to go through.
I mean, who's better out of the Big Ten Conference, Jason?
Well, on their side of things, basically all you have is Wisconsin. They're going to have to go to East Lansing and play Michigan State. But, you know, the Michigan State's on the other side of the conference. And all you really have is Wisconsin. And, I mean, that was kind of, you know, the knock when they split these teams up into the East and West. And, you know, most of the talent and the football is being played on the East side of things. And on the West, you have Nebraska, you have Wisconsin, you got Iowa. You know, that's pretty much it. And Wisconsin's not great this year. I use that cautiously great. I almost feel anytime you're talking Big Ten football and you use the word great, you know, for listeners, I don't want that to be confused with SEC great, Alabama great, or that type of football. But from the Big Ten standard, you don't have much on the West side of things. So Nebraska should be playing in that Big Ten championship game as long as they don't shoot themselves in the foot.
Okay, Jason Peter with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Remember, connect with us online at Twitter at E Radio Sports. So the Huskers, they move up three spots in the polls. Just give me a quick hit on your quarterback, Tommy Armstrong Jr. What has he shown you so far, Jason?
He's maturing. You know, there were times last year, and, you know, you can't hold it against him really as a freshman. He was a freshman last year, a retro freshman. But there were times when he would get careless with the ball. And, you know, he'd come out and just throw a pick when the situation, the moment in the game clearly called for, you know, just throw the ball away or take a 2-3 yard loss. But, you know, you just cannot turn the ball over the way that he was. And there are still times when I think most Nebraska fans are holding their breath, and there are times where he'll throw the ball into a situation that, clearly he should not be throwing the ball. And this year they've been fortunate where it hasn't come back to bite him in the butt so bad yet. You know, I think he's thrown a pick or two. But those are things that quarterbacks are going to do. You just hope that he continues to grow and continues to have a better understanding of the offense and, you know, do the things that he does well, you know, highlight those things. And that's not necessarily on Tommy Armstrong. Mm-hmm. That's on Tim Beck, the offensive coordinator. And there were issues coming out of that McNeese State game where, you know, Bo Pelini was asked about the play calling or or, you know, what happened in the second half, and you know, why Amir Abdullah only got the ball two or three times, you know, in the second half of that game, and Bo clearly said that, you know, things are going to change, and he should have stepped up, you know, during the course of the game, but he's going to make sure something like that doesn't happen again. So I'm sure him and Tim Beck have had some lengthy conversations about how this team, how this offense moves forward, and that's, you know, obviously with Amir Abdullah as the focus piece.
Okay, the Cornhuskers start Big Ten play on Saturday night and take on Illinois, and we'll look forward to getting into that next week. But I want to move ahead as we are continuing talking college football. Your thoughts on Charlie Strong kicking off with the ninth player on the team. I mean, so much for the Longhorn season and building team chemistry. I mean, what were your thoughts? I mean, is he in danger of losing the locker room? That was talked a lot about in the national media this week, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of, you know, the dilemma that you're faced with when you do something like that. But this is the reality. I mean, he's trying to change a culture down there. You know, there's no reason why the University of Texas should not be competing for national championships year after year. They make too much money down there. They spend too much money. You know, there's everything at Charlie Strong's fingertips, you know, that he could ever possibly imagine in wanting to, you know, run a Division I football team. You know, he's got everything down there. And the only thing that he doesn't have is a player's understanding of what he expects out of them on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, there comes a point where the warnings just don't cut it anymore with some of these guys. And saying, this won't be tolerated, you know, it happened this time, but you're not going to get away with it next time. You know, if guys see that, well, maybe that's just all talk, you know, because he let Johnny, you know, Billy Bob stay on the team after, you know, he got in trouble three or four times, you know, then he loses all credibility when he's standing in front of that locker room. So there comes a point where he's got to make those players accountable, and that's what he's doing. And he's saying, you know, you either do it my way or you're gone. And that's kind of, you know, I think he's basically showing guys he's not there to mess around. He's there to win football games, and he's going to do it his way. And you either follow, you know, what he's asking you to do, or you're going to be gone. So I got no problem with what Charlie Strong's doing. It's tough, you know. These kids, they show up today, and especially you're talking about Texas. I mean, they're bringing in all four or five-star kids who have, you know, been put up on a pedestal their whole life. A lot of these kids are showing up on campus, and they think, you know, they're the cat's meow, and nobody can tell them, you know, how they're going to play or what to do or how they're going to live their life. And a lot of these kids, they think that they have more power than the coach. So, you gotta let them know who's in charge.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for dropping by, JP.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead tonight at YSR. Okay, we're getting ready to spice things up tonight inside the Quicken Loan Studios at Yahoo Sports Radio. That's because we have invited back from our outstanding lineup right here at YSR, former NFL and college football standout and the co-host of Prime Cut with John Granato, and that is Sean Salisbury. And I got to tell you, Sean, I was listening to the show on the way back home from Dallas on Monday, and here I think I'm going to get, you know, like a football fix, and you guys were really getting it on, talking about the Ryder Cup. I loved your enthusiasm and passion.
Oh, we do love it. You know, I'm one of those guys, I really wasn't. I'm a baseball, basketball, and other sport guy. You just get pigeonholed to being football. It's football season. We got to talk about it. But whenever we get a chance to, and I'm pumped that hockey starts. So I'm a diehard. And this Ryder Cup, I'm one of those guys that's going to sit in front of the TV and, like, get excited and over every putt. So, yeah, it was fun. And then you get good guests like a Jerry Foles on or something to talk Ryder Cup. It's pretty awesome because I can remember back when, like, Paul Azinger and those guys, and they were, I'm talking about the war at the shore, if you remember, in South Carolina, mm-hmm. when they had to buy the beach, and it was intense. So I'm excited about this weekend's Ryder Cup. It should be fun. I know the Europeans are favored, but U.S. will hang around.
Well, the European team, obviously, as you just said, a heavy favorite. And I got to ask you, what needs to happen so that they can kind of turn the corner? You were talking about Paul Azinger, and you love his passion, his just kind of cutthroat approach to the game. And the Americans, they need that, don't they?
I think every squad, and especially on the Americans, that's why when I asked Jerry Foles on our interview, I said, mm-hmm. Jerry, what I need... Who's that guy? Who is Paul Azinger that's going to grab it? See, Zinger didn't care in that short 3 days, didn't care if you liked him, didn't care if you were best friends and going to have a beer afterwards. He was there to cut your heart out and feed it to you. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm waiting. Is it Patrick Reed? Who is that guy? Because I'm going to tell you what now. While I'm obviously rooting for the U.S., the Europeans just seem, I mean, they take this serious. Mm-hmm. And the President's Cup we got and the Ryder Cup, this is their baby. I mean, come on and do it. And I know we're heavy underdogs, the U.S., and they'll be fine because they got some good players. But I think for the U.S., I'd like to see them come out and grab somebody around the throat early. I just don't think you want it to get to, in the singles, five golfers to play, down by two or three, and allow the Europeans to do what they do, and they make clutch putts, and they thrive on this. Not to say in a regular tournament, U.S. guys don't. But if you're asking me if I want a European from a 12-footer to win the tournament, or right now U.S. just on this current Ryder Cup team, the way that the guys are playing right now, I wouldn't bet against the Europeans right now what they're playing. But I love at least every team with basketball.
Sure.
I don't care if it's volleyball. I don't care if it's golf. I don't care if it's football. Every team has to have at least one guy that being your buddy isn't important to me. Now, when the Ryder Cup's over, we'll go have a beer together. But during that time, like Zinger was, to me, he was one of the greatest Ryder Cuppers of all time, just his personality, because people fed off that. He's one of those guys that could be down by three, and he'll grind his way back in because he's not going to be your buddy until the tournament's over, and I love that about him.
Our very own Sean Salisbury joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. So no Tiger, is this a good thing, Sean?
You know what? I actually think that the U.S., this is my opinion, I mean, I don't think it's ever a good thing when a guy who was a player of the year last year is not on the team. But the truth is, he hasn't played well enough. He hasn't earned it. He hasn't played well enough to make it.
Right.
So I think that the U.S. is going to be okay because other guys are playing better. You know what? While you like his fire and he's the best player in the world, the intimidation factor from him has kind of gone away a little bit. And so people used to be like, oh, my gosh, I got to play him. Now it's like, oh, my gosh, I get to play him, and he got to get that back. So I don't think not having Tiger is a detriment to the U.S. team. I really don't. Just simply the way he's playing. There's a couple guys in the U.S. team that aren't playing well right now either that made it because they were able to win at times early enough. So it's a bummer not having him because ratings and the rest of it. But that being said, because you always want to see what sideshow, you know, the fans and everything bring when Tiger's there. But I don't think that having Tiger would have made us a favorite or actually increased it. I think the guys that are on there, you would have liked to have somebody down the stretch that's playing well do it. And Tom Watson, I think he's a lot smarter golf guy than I am, so we'll stick with this team.
Well, as you said, there are notable names that are absent this year. Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods, Jason Duffner. But there was a lot of chatter in terms of with Captain Watson and who he did select.
Yeah, you know what, with when it comes down with Dustin Johnson, we obviously he needed to get himself
to
get his life in order, and we were talking about it this week that you think, oh my gosh, Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods, man alive, these are two guys in every other we'd see that these two guys belong on the team, but one's got some off the course problems, one's got some things going on with injuries, and on the course not playing. The Tiger's not driving the ball better than you are right now, and that's crazy when you're talking about what may be the second best golfer or best of all time. So or second best behind Jack. But you know what? It's like the All-Star game. There's always going to be guys that we question, why'd you leave him off? Why isn't he at the Pro Bowl? Why isn't he? He only got so many picks. So you go with your gut. And like I said, Tom Watson knows what happens over the pond. He's won there many times in many majors. And it's not so much a lot of time if a guy's more talented. It's the chemistry of a team. And the Europeans always, you know, those guys will go out and drink together, laugh together, joke together.
Right.
And I think that's important in the Ryder Cup. But we got some great, hey, Fowler, you don't think Fowler or Patrick Reed love this?
Yeah.
Of course they do. And they're going to be into it. I know they take it serious. So, you know, while some names are left off, the truth of the matter is, Tom Watson, I'd like to have Watson playing because he seems to know how to play well over there. It'd be nice if he could put a club in his hand, but I think he'll do fine. And truly, the captain, other than Perrin, it comes down, can you make a putt or not? The captain isn't going to putt for you, so you better find a way to get it done.
Hey, our very own Sean Salisbury joining us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. And let's move ahead now, Sean. Let's get some NFL news and notes. And I want to talk about your former team. Seattle defeats the Broncos, but was this a moral victory for Denver?
I don't believe in moral victories, Big E. I don't. I never have. Now, if you ask me if the gap closed a little bit with that late run at the fourth quarter, I believe that. But if you're Seattle, you're saying, you can give us all you want. We still won. We still physically were better than you in the first three quarters, and then the great quarterback of all time came through you back into the game. I think the gap closed. If you're Denver, you would feel better about another game with them, I think. But you still can't. It started out the same way the Super Bowl. You can't start sluggish. Seattle's too good.
You can't ease into it.
You can't. And the thing I love about, here's Russell Wilson. What normal guy hope that it goes to overtime so he can win it? I mean, most of us mere mortals are like, right. I don't want any part of that. Heck, somebody win this game so we don't have to go back out there. Here's a guy who thrives on it, and that's why he's unique. I think he's the most poised player in the NFL. But do I think the gap closed? Yes. But knowing Peyton Manning, there's nothing about him. He'll go feed off some good stuff, but there's nothing about him that'll go home and say, you know what, we kept it close, we pushed it to overtime. That's great. Players don't accept moral victories. Got better. Things you got to improve on, because we may see another one of these in February. But the bottom line, the king's still wearing the belt, and they're the champ until you knock them off the pedestal.
That's right. Seattle survives the nail biter, but are the Seahawks, are they as good as they were last year?
You know what? 3 weeks ago, I think we all thought they were better. I did. I mean, after their first game, you're like, oh, they demolished Green Bay. But now you look at Green Bay and you think, Green Bay's not very good. And then they go to San Diego, and you think, well, wait a minute, Denver better be afraid, because San Diego's a really good football team.
Right.
And then they win that game. And then Seattle goes on the road to beat Buffalo. I mean, it's crazy. I think we panic too much early in the season. I do. We make a big deal because we've buried the Saints. And Aaron Rodgers isn't playing well. 6 weeks from now, Aaron Rodgers will have plenty of touchdowns, and they'll win a few games. But you start to see after 4 or 5 weeks that a team is what they are, their M.O. The Packers can't protect. The Saints, they're too finesse. But the Seahawks, if you're asking me if they're the one thing, they didn't get fat and happy this offseason. I think they're confident still. Are they better than last year? 3 weeks ago, I thought they were, because I think their quarterback's even better. I think he's more mature. So, and not only more mature, but better from the pocket. He gets it. He got that poise. But I really don't know. After 3 weeks, I would say that last year's team wouldn't be afraid of this year's team, and this year's team is not nearly afraid of last year's team if you were playing Seattle versus Seattle.
Okay, the great Sean Salisbury is with us tonight at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, and I definitely want to get hit on the Philadelphia Eagles, Kerry Williams, crying about practice being too hard. What was your take?
He could. If Kerry Williams is crying about practice being too hard now, he'd have never made it 15 years ago. And I'm being serious. Where he had to practice, he would have been through 4 weeks of training camp where every day, 2 days, you're in pads. They can't even put him in pads 2 days. And I'm sure Chip Kelly, obviously behind closed doors, took him aside and said, wrong. Plus, you don't want to say that to your players. You just don't. You're 3-0. You haven't played great, but you're 3-0. You're winning football games. To me, I just kind of brush that aside and say, listen, grow up.
Is he soft?
Well, apparently. Apparently. I mean, maybe it's the fact that you give up some plays and you don't like it. Dude, there's never been a time in NFL history that practices are easier and more controlled. And when I say easier than they were, and I'm not saying old school tough guys. Dude, come on. A couple weeks of training camp, never have two practices in a row in pads. I think that's a little soft, but I think Chip Kelly will take care of that because Philadelphia is a good football team.
Okay, give me a quick hit. We're running out of time. I'm on the Cowboys. They certainly surprised with that big
guy. I'm surprised about two things. Is their commitment to the run game, because they usually throw it away and out to the side and don't commit to it. And their defense is actually playing better. I don't think they're going anywhere, but for starters, they're better off than we thought they'd be.
Okay, that's our NFL news and notes with our very own Sean Salisbury from Yahoo Sports Radio. I know you're working some overtime. Appreciate you dropping by. Sorry, the studio is so hot. It's like stifling in here.
Always great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Much more straight ahead right here at YSR.